is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
There's not any magic formula to it. It's just you got to be honest with everybody and say, hey, this is your role. This is where I see you. It's not easy. It breaks my heart a lot of times to look at a kid who's just really busting his ass and he works his tail off and say, hey, you're not where you need to be right now. I've got other guys that need those reps.
Matt Grahn is in his first year as the head coach of the University of Dallas men's basketball program. He became the program's 17th head coach on July 16, 2021, after working for 10 seasons as a volunteer assistant by the side of former coach Jared Samples, who became the school's AD this summer. Grahn was also the recruiting coordinator for the University of Dallas Athletics Department for the past 9 years. He assisted in recruiting efforts for all 15 of the NCAA Division III varsity athletic programs. Grahn previously spent time in various coaching roles at Concordia University, Texas Lutheran University, McNeese State University, Seminole State College, Eastern Washington University, Moscow High School in Idaho, and Washington State University under head coach Kevin Eastman. In 2011, Grahn became a certified trainer for the Positive Coaching Alliance. PCA is a nonprofit organization founded at Stanford University with the mission to transform youth sports so sports can transform youth. Hey, Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Sign up now for their virtual camp 2.0 featuring 10 days of workouts with pro trainers from the Dr. Dish family. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Stan Johnson, head men's basketball coach at Loyola Marymount University, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
If you're looking to improve your coaching, please consider joining the Hoopheads Mentorship Program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly. Mike@hoopheadspod.com. Follow us on social media at hoopheadspod on Twitter and Instagram, and be sure to check out the Hoopheads Podcast Network for more great basketball content. Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, FastModel is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and FastScout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. FastModel also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. FastModel Sports is the best in basketball. Take some notes as you listen to this episode with Matt Grahn, men's basketball head coach at the University of Dallas. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight. And we are pleased to welcome back to the Hoopheads pod for his second appearance in a new position since the last time we talked to him, the head coach at the University of Dallas, Matt Grahn. Matt, welcome back to the Hoopheads pod.
Mike, Jason, thanks for having me. It's quite an honor to be on your show again. I joined an elite group there. Alan Stein, for sure. I know he was, he's been on a couple times. And of course, my good friend, Greg White, he's on quite frequently. So it is an honor to be back on the show again. Thanks.
Well, we appreciate that. And we are excited to have you on. And we probably, I think, Jason, didn't we figure out how many people we had on.
Oh,
twice.
Man, Mike, this, you're putting this in. You're putting
me
in this position.
Have, you don't have to recalculate it, but we calculated this.
I think
this
it was somewhere
couple,
about 23, 24, 20,
somewhere
yeah,
something
in there.
Something
like that. And like that includes a few people that we've had on for like our NBA shows. We've had a few people on for NBA shows a few times. And yeah, I want to say it's somewhere. You're like number 25. It's a repeat guest. So that would be, if you were number 25, Matt, that's pretty special.
It's humbling. Let me tell you.
Well, I wouldn't be too humble about it.
And but. if we count if you count the number of times you've done the roundtable a few times, right, Matt?
That's true. Yeah.
So you've been on. True. So you've been on all other times too. So I want to make sure I throw that in the ring too. There
you
Mike.
Go.
Absolutely. There you go. Well, again, Matt, we can't thank you enough for being a part of it and jumping back on with us. We are excited to talk to you because since the last time we talked to you, you have taken over the head coaching position at the University of Dallas from your previous head coach, Jarrett Samples, who became the athletic director
Correct.
At the University of Dallas. So tell us a little bit about how that came to be. When did the two of you start having discussions about him leaving, you taking over? Was that something that you did talk about beforehand? Was it something that he sprung on you? Just kind of give us the genesis of how this all came to pass.
Yeah. So the previous athletic director originally was he planned on retiring July 1 of 2020, and we obviously were in the middle of a pandemic, and the then president at the University of Dallas asked the AD to stay on because he didn't want to do an athletic director search in the middle of a pandemic. So he delayed his retirement for another year. So originally, when we found out the athletic director was going to retire in spring of 2020, Jared and I sat down and talked, and I said, hey, are you going to put your name in? I think you'd be really good at that. I think you'd be really good for us as a department. And he said, yeah, you know, I think I will. And I said, okay, let's play devil's advocate here and you know, if you got the job, would you continue coaching? And he said, yeah, I'd probably give it a go for a year. And at the end of the first year of doing it, I'd reevaluate and, you know, see if it was feasible or not. And I said, that's great. You know, good for you. I think that's a great position to be in, and kind of left it at that. So then fast forward a year later. The interview process is going on, and I'm also the SAC committee, Student Athlete Advisory Council, is mine. I'm the sponsor of that for our department. And during the athletic director interviews this summer, they gave SAC a portion of the interview. They gave the SAC committee about an hour with each candidate. And I asked the kids, I said, hey, you know, I don't want to be that middle-aged guy in the middle of the room, if you don't want me there, please, I'll stay away. But, if you want me there, I'll be there for you. And they said, yeah, coach, we want you in there. So in Jared's interview, one of the SAC committee members, a volleyball player, said, well, you know, you're coaching men's basketball right now. What are your plans if you get the job? And he said, in all fairness to the other sports, I don't think it would be fair for me to continue coaching men's basketball anymore. And my jaw hit the floor.
He's like, this is the first time I heard this.
Yeah. You know, because we'd had that conversation a year before.
Right.
And of course, all the kids looked at me. And I'm just in shock. And I was like, hey, coach, I just want you to know, I did not ask them to ask that question, you know. I was worried, like he was thinking I was prompting him to do it. And so then they followed up with, well, what would you do with the men's basketball position? And he laid it out there. He says, I think it's just a natural fit that Coach Gron has been with me 10 out of the last 11 years. He's recruited these guys and he's earned it. The position would be his. And again, I about fell out of my chair.
You're like, I thought this was supposed to be your interview, not mine.
Right. It was just, I got goosebumps. I got, you know, the hair on my arms stood up. And at the end of his interview, I pulled him aside and said, hey, look, I just want to make sure you understand, like, I did not ask them to do this. And I'm completely honored and humbled and, you know, flattered and all the feels, that you think I'm ready for this position. And, fast forward to July, well, just the end of, June, it was the Monday before, the 1st of July. And I can't remember the exact date, but the committee called Jared on a Monday and offered him the job. And on Tuesday, he called me in his office and he said, I'm giving you the keys to the car as soon as I can, as soon as we can make it official. And he started, his official start date was July 2nd. And then we had to sit on it for about 2.5 weeks. What's crazy, Mike, is and Jason, is that the HR policy at the University of Dallas, it would have gone quicker to announce me as the head men's basketball coach if I had resigned my previous position and they rehired me as the men's basketball coach than to just transfer me into my new role. So
why is that?
I don't know. I don't know all the inner workings of it. The HR director, she was very apologetic about it.
It's probably nepotism, Matt.
I don't know.
That's what it is.
But she was very apologetic through the process. And the day I got hired, you know, she was really excited. She gave me a big hug and congratulated me. And so that's kind of how that went down.
So there was no need to go through like the formal, let's bring in some outside candidates and interview. It was pretty much, this is what we want to do. We just have to go through the official process of human resources, as opposed to we've kind of got to go through and
make it
look like we're interviewing people. So it was pretty much just the job was yours once Jared took over as the AD.
That's correct. Yeah.
Got it. Yeah. Got it. Okay. Yeah. So my first question to you is, you've worked with someone for 10 years closely,
mm-hmm.
and you're taking over the program. So there's a fine line to walk there between saying there are probably things that as an assistant coach, you've thought to yourself over the years, boy, if I was the head coach, I might have handled that or done that a little mm-hmm. bit differently. And yet at the same time, your former boss is now your current boss in a different role. And so you have to, I'm sure, tread lightly on, hey, we're going to come in and we're going to totally revamp this thing and
right.
do a whole bunch of different things. So how did you think about or approach that particular, I don't know if it's a problem, but that particular aspect of sure. taking the job?
Yeah, it's the good part about it is, you know, Jared and I had an outstanding working relationship, and he gave me a lot of ownership into what we did, you know, tactically, off the court, you know, culturally, all that stuff. So I really felt that even in my position as his assistant coach, that I had a lot of input on what we did. You know, yeah, there are certain things that I'm going to have my little personality and put my mark on things. But the great part about it is I can go into Jared and still, you know, bounce ideas off him and say, hey, what do you think? And, you know, he might wince at it and go, I don't know. But he says flat out, I'm going to support you, whatever you decide. And that's the great thing about where I'm at is this is my first collegiate head coaching job. I was a high school head coach 22 years ago. But you know, first collegiate head coaching job, my AD is not only a guy I worked with, you know, sat on his bench 10 out of 11 years, have 11 year working relationship and a 17 year friendship with. I think it's just set up perfectly. I have no fear. In fact, I want Jared to be involved. I can't say this for sure, but, you know, we just started practice 5 days ago. He's poked his head in, I think, for all of 2 minutes. I think part of that's he's just busier than a one-legged man in a butt-kicking contest. But the other part is I think he's trying to give me space. And I want him actually to be observing and in the gym and let me know all the things I'm doing wrong. I do. I want that feedback. I mean, I
absolutely. That's how you grow, right?
That's it. I mean, if you can't tell people the truth, you can't get any better.
What was the challenge for you as a Division III head coach, a first-time head coach, and your players come back to school, back on campus? What's your guys' situation COVID-wise, I guess, before I ask my next question?
Good question. So last year, we ended our semester, our first semester, at Thanksgiving. We started school a little earlier. And so, you know, first semester ended at Thanksgiving. We sent the guys home. We didn't have them back until January 6th. So you talk about white knuckles holding on for dear life, hoping that they're staying in shape and remembering all the stuff we taught them.
Right.
We were scheduled for 12 regular season games, all conference games. We played back-to-back, the same team, Friday, Saturday, and that was for testing purposes, keep the cost down, that kind of stuff. We got 10 of those games in because, as you probably recall, in February, we had that big freeze here in Texas that shut everything down. And then there was no national tournament at the end of last year, so they extended out, instead of the conference tournament over 3 days, it was over 3 weeks, each round on a Saturday. And unfortunately, we lost by six in the first round of the conference tournament. So got 11 games in last year. We had to mask up during practice. Of the 19 guys we had on roster last year, three of them played in all 11 games. Like, it was just wild. Like, we went into 1 week, and Monday, Jared and I are looking at each other, and we're like, we have six guys for practice today. Like, it was just unreal. So fast forward now. Everything right now is back to normal. We don't have to mask up during practice. Testing, you know, if kids choose not to get vaccinated, they have to test. It's like I said, it's relatively normal for us right now.
Campus, everybody's back in class?
Everybody's back in class. We did have to shut down after the first week of school. We had a record incoming freshman class at the University of Dallas. We had 500 students come in. And biggest class in UD history. And the first week of school, on a Thursday night, we have programming every Thursday night called Tidget. Thank God it's Thursday. And of course, every freshman on campus wants to go see all the other freshmen on campus. And it just kind of went nuts. And we had to shut things down for a week and a half. But since then, it's been good. You know, we also have a new president, Mike and Jason. They he took over in January of this past year, J.J. Sanford. And Dr. Sanford is a former student athlete himself. He was a collegiate rower, and he gets it. He's very supportive of what we do in athletics. He wants to expand athletics. He gets, you know, those intangible things that athletics provides to the student athlete experience and the greater campus experience as well. You know, what I figured out is a lot of times that when you have administrators who say they back athletics, they are typically academians and they don't know how to communicate the things that athletics provide student athletes. When you've got a student athlete in that position, who is also into academia, they can communicate that a lot better to the academic types and make it make sense. And so what I've seen since January is a lot of growth in our department, a lot more willingness to collaborate and work together and integrate athletics into the greater campus community. So, you know, it's really neat to see that happen. And, you know, it's going to make, I think it's going to make our department grow and I can't remember exactly where I was going with this.
What does that look like? So when you say that you're going to do a better job of integrating the athletic department with the campus at large, what's something boots on the ground? What does that look like?
So one of the things that we're doing with the men's basketball program is, first of all, I want to maintain the fun factor of college athletics, not only for my players, but the entire community. So we're doing theme games every game. Every home game is going to have a theme. And some of them are really stupid and goofy. But, you know, like that's what I want. I want it to be stupid and goofy for these kids to come out and enjoy themselves and have a good time. So, you know, the Star Wars night and Aloha night and, you know, get dressed up in your superhero costumes. And one I'm actually really looking forward to, and Mike, you'll appreciate this, you're about the same age I am, is we play Centenary at home the Wednesday before reading day, which is a day off before finals. So finals start on Friday. We're theming that one like Rock Your Finals, and it's going to be like all 80s hair metal.
Nice. There you go.
Yeah, yeah, like our playlist.
Little Twisted Sister.
That's it. Yeah. You know, all Twisted right. Sister, Motley Crue, Van Halen, you know, wait, tease wait, your wait. Hair You're, out. And...
You, the two bald guys are talking about hair metal.
That's yeah, right. Exactly. There you go. That's it. Hold on a second. There you go.
Too much Aquanet back in the day. That, it'll bald
you. I never had any of those problems. So, but yeah, that's funny.
You know, but simple things like that. The other thing that we're doing with my SAC group is we created a position in our leadership group within SAC as a community outreach, you know, executive. And that person's in charge of finding projects for our SAC group to participate in and then try and, you know, get our SAC reps to get their team members to come back and help out with the projects too. So one we're looking at doing is just a campus cleanup where, you know, you wear your team gear on a Saturday and we just go pick up trash all around campus and, you know, try and beautify the campus a little bit. So, you know, little things like that right now. That's the immediate boots on the ground stuff that you're talking about. Long-term, what Dr. Sanford's talking about is, you know, building a new facility as far as health and wellness for the entire community, you know, for the entire campus community, as well as, you know, new locker room spaces, office spaces, practice floors, that kind of stuff for athletics.
I think if you get that done, and obviously, as you said, if you have a supportive administration, then it's much more likely somebody who has the experience in athletics that they're going to see the greater value in that, whereas somebody who doesn't have that athletic background might not see it in the same way.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, Jared told me at one time, one of the campus presidents at UD, I mean, I think it was before he got here in the mid-90s. So it had, you know, it was early 90s, maybe late 80s. One of the previous presidents didn't even have an idea that there was a gym on campus.
Yeah, that could be a problem.
Big problem.
All right. So when you get that job, what's the first conversation like with your team? Are you reaching out to guys individually? Do you get a chance to meet with the Division III rules and the contact and all that kind of thing? How does that first conversation go, either with individual players or with the team as a whole?
Well, okay. So it's funny reflecting back on that. Before Jared got announced as the athletic director, he said, you know, I want to have a team Zoom meeting because the guys were at home. They'd gone home for the summer. He says, I want to have a team Zoom meeting and I want to tell them that I'm taking the athletic director job and I want to let them know that I'm naming you the head coach. And I was like, great, let's do it. And, you know, I'm ready for it. And I was excited that he was going to be a part of that. So we arranged to have the Zoom meeting with our team, and 15 minutes before we get on the Zoom call, he texts me, he says, hey, call me ASAP. And I was like, well, okay, this can't be good. I call him and he says, hey, I just want you to know, I talked to the president's right-hand man, his chief of staff, and he said, yeah, you probably shouldn't say anything about Coach Gron getting the job, until it's official. And Jared's like, are you okay with that? And I was like, hey, I mean, if that's the rules, that's what we got to do. And so we hop on this Zoom call, and Jared greets all the guys, and everybody's, you know, laughing and kind of joking. And Jared says, you know, hey, just want to let you guys know that I accepted the athletic director job, and I will not be coaching the men's basketball team any longer. And they just stopped. And it was like, you could hear a pin drop. And you know how it is on Zoom. You get everybody's picture on there. It looked like that Brady Bunch scene where everyone's like looking around at each other.
See, yeah. See what everyone's reaction was.
Right. And they're like, and I know they're waiting for me to chime in. And I had to sit there and I had to sit on it. And it was just awkward and weird. And so we get done with that Zoom call. And of course, my phone just starts blowing up. Guys are texting me, what's going on? What's happening? You know, are you going to be the guy? And I'm just like, I can't tell you. Like, I don't want to get in trouble. I don't want to jeopardize this. You know, I know I'm sitting on it, but I don't want to say anything and ruin it. And the good thing was that a couple of the upperclassmen had been in Jared's office earlier that day, and Jared already let the cat out of the bag. So, all of a sudden, the phone starts going, oh, I just talked to so-and-so. You know, he told me what's up. And I was like, all right. So when I officially got named, we actually jumped on the Zoom. And, of course, it's 2.5 weeks later. And the guys, you know, they're all breathing a sigh of relief. You know, they were very excited in the fact that they already had a relationship with me. They, you know, they had a feel for who I was on the court. And I reassured them. I said, look, you know, stylistically, we're going to do things very, very similar because I had a heavy hand in what we did as far as X's and O's. And, you know, I just see it being a successful thing for us to continue doing what we've been doing. And it was humbling when the guys all were responding how excited they were that I was the guy, you know, like they were pumped and they didn't want to go through a search and have somebody that they didn't know and trust. And so, I'm not going to lie to you. There were a lot of tears shed, happy tears, as guys threw their support behind me.
How difficult was it this fall to be on campus, be ready to go, be excited to be the head coach, and with the Division III rules that you have,
and not be able to get on the court with them,
right, limited ability to interact with your guys at all. What was that like, and what were you doing with your time while you're just sitting around waiting for practice to start?
Yeah, it was surprisingly easier than I thought, simply because we had really thrown ourselves into recruiting even before Jared got the AD job, and once I took over, man, we put the throttle down, full speed ahead. This is not a knock on Jared. I think it's one of his finer qualities. He is humble to a fault, I'm not afraid to be a out there and sell myself a little bit and kind of do some goofy stuff. So when I got the job, man, we put the throttle down, recruiting wise, and that's what we focused on. And so, to be honest with you, while it was in the back of my mind, like, yeah, man, I'm ready to hit the floor with these guys, it didn't cross my mind nearly as much as I thought, because we were just recruiting our butts off. And I'll tell you, we averaged since the first day of classes, we averaged about 5 visits a week. Up until October 8th, I gave the guys a week off before practice. Like, hey, I get it. You guys need a break because we've been hitting this thing hard. So, you know, 5 visits a week, I didn't get a lot done other than, you know, entertaining 17, 18-year-old dudes on campus. So that kept me pretty busy. And, you know, that week before practice, that's when it really kicked in, Mike, was just – you know, trying to figure out, all right, how are we going to break this down? What am I going to do differently You know, what is a practice plan going to look like? What is the, you know, what do we need to get in? How are we going to break things down? It really became intensive basketball at that point.
From a pacing standpoint and trying to figure out, all right, here's when we start. Here's when the first game is.
Yep.
Trying to gauge out what we need to get in, how we need to get in, whatever changes you're going to make to what you've done in the past, whether that's from the actual basketball philosophy and the things mm-hmm. you're actually going to put in with the players to how are we going to structure practice. What was the biggest challenge in that process of just figuring out what was Matt Grahn's program going to look like versus the previous program?
Yeah. You know, the biggest change I made was our the pace of our practice. Again, this is not a knock on Jared. I love him to death and I'd lay across train tracks for the guy. But I felt like we took too many breaks and there was too much downtime, and that's like fingernails on a chalkboard to me. And he and I have talked about it numerous times, and, you know, we've argued about it, and ultimately the record went next to his name, and that's what we did. Now it goes next to my name. And man, the guys have already said, even after these first 5 days of practice, the pace of practice is much faster. And that's a Kevin Eastman influence on me, is that a lot of our drills are, there's just a lot of moving parts and there's a lot of balls flying all over the place. And, you know, there's confusion and there's movement and you gotta navigate things and keep your head up. Otherwise you might catch one in the ear. But that's the way I like to do things. And I think that, if we're going to be in the gym, we're going to get work done. And, you know, there's no sense in resting, if we can be doing something and get out earlier, you know. The other thing too is I'm not afraid to cut drills. I've already found myself a couple times going, all right, hey, you guys got a grasp on it. You know, it was a 10-minute drill. You guys got it in 6 minutes. Like, let's move on. Let's chop those 4 minutes off and get on to the next thing. And the guys are all looking around like, what are you doing? I'm like, you got it. Like, why keep doing it? You know?
Right, right.
And at the end of practice, the guys are like, hey, thanks, coach. And I was like, what? And they're like, we got 4 extra minutes. You know what I mean? Like, and I told them, I said, I want to do that, but that's on you guys. You guys have to tell me and show me that you can do these things, and I'll start chopping drills. Those have been two, I think, really, really major changes. And the guys feel it. They, you know, they see the change. But as far as like X and O stuff, we're pretty much on pace with what we've done in the past, as far as, you know, putting, you know, our offense in and defensive schemes and that kind of stuff. So, as far as that goes, I feel good about where we're at.
How many guys do you have on the practice floor right now with you?
Right now we've got 18. I have 16 recruited and I took, 2 walk-on guys. Now I do have a basketball class. I teach a basketball fundamentals class, and, you can only take it once. You can't repeat it. So all the incoming freshmen on the team, they sign up for it, and then it's open to the general student populace. And the guys that want to try out, that's kind of what I use as a tryout. Is like, sign up for the class and we'll see, you know, see what you're all about. In fact, funny story about this. Let me take a little bunny trail here, Mike.
Sure. A
few years ago, you know, Jared had that basketball fundamentals class, and we have a seminary next door to campus, Catholic seminary. And we had 6 seminarians sign up for the class, and these guys were great, man. They came in, and first of all, they're smoking cigarettes right outside the gym before they come in. And so Jared and I asked them. We said, you know, hey, how hard and heavy do you want to get after this? And they were like, hey, we want to see what it's like to be a varsity basketball player. And we're like, okay. And after about the first 2 weeks, all six of them came to me and they're like, hey, coach, do you mind if we slow it down a little bit? I said, that's great. All right. So, but they wanted to be really good in their intramural stuff and they wanted to learn. And so I actually took all these six seminarian guys down to one end of the floor. And we actually worked on some things that they could do in their intramural games. And it was actually a really fun time to work with those guys. They'd come back and they'd be like, hey, I just watched the Lakers last night and they're icing ball screens like you guys do. And I'm like, yeah, right. That's what it's all about, right?
That's cool. That's very cool.
So anyway, the roster this year, like I said, we had two guys try out and they were really good guys. They work really, really hard and our guys seemed to like them. So I took them and actually found a manager out of that class.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah. So 18 guys. Ideally, I'd like to be at 20. Just, you know, in my experiences at Division III, I've been a D3 guy since 2003, all but 1 year. And my first D3 experience, we had, we treated it like a Division I thing. You know, we had like 13 guys on the roster and that was it. And if we lost a point guard and a wing to graduation, that's all we recruited was point guards and wings. And the issue that I saw with that was that the returning guys felt safe. And I don't think that they put in the same amount of time that was, or I shouldn't say that. I should say they didn't put in the time necessary to get better over the summer and in the off season because they knew nobody was coming in behind them. And the other thing that happened was my last year there, we had two guys quit. One kid couldn't afford to come back second semester, and two guys had season-ending injuries. So we had eight guys at practice. And so obviously that's not a good situation. The next D3 school I went to, we had 45, 50 guys in the gym at the beginning of the year for 18 roster spots. Like we literally cut over half of the guys that were recruited to come to play there. And I didn't think that was fair to those kids. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
It just, I don't know, morally, ethically, it grinded on me big time. And so, you know, I think 20 is the sweet spot where you can still have some attrition, and end the year being able to play 5-on-5, you know, with at least 10 healthy bodies. Yeah.
How do you balance the reps with, let's say you have 20, how do you balance the reps in practice?
Yeah.
And how do you communicate to the players with the guys maybe who aren't going to get as many reps? How do you communicate that to them? What do those conversations sound like?
Yeah. You got to be honest. And it, you know, it goes back to what I said earlier. If you can't be honest, you can't get any better. And, you know, specifically these two walk-on kids, I had individual meetings with both of them. I said, look, man, I'm going to give you your shot. However, understand that in practice, you probably need to take one out of every four reps available to you. And make the best out of that one. And if you want to continue to get better, then it's, you know, post-practice, pre-practice, throughout the day, and even in basketball class. So I think it's not – there's not any magic formula to it. It's just you got to be honest with everybody and say, hey, this is your role. This is where I see you. It's not easy. It breaks my heart a lot of times to look at a kid who's just really busting his ass and he works his tail off and say, you know, hey, you're not where you need to be right now.
Right.
I've got other guys that need those reps.
When you take over and it's obviously a new voice that your returning players have heard before, but heard it in a different capacity.
Right.
So how do you make sure, A, that the players are looking at you as the head coach? And obviously you had a good relationship with them and they were supportive and all those kinds of things. But there's still a transition when you go from being an assistant to being a head coach where
you're a voice over here on the side versus you're the voice over here that's making decisions about who plays and who doesn't. So how did you handle that transition? How have you seen the players handling it? And just talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. Well, again, I'm completely transparent and honest with them. I've had individual meetings with our guys. One of the things I did when I, in that first Zoom meeting after I got named, is I told them, I said, look, I want to be, I want to re-recruit you in a way. So I offered to do individual meetings with the players and their families and get their families on board as well. And that was hugely beneficial. And I told them in those meetings, I said, look, you know, I get it. We have a relationship. It's going to be a little different in the fact that what used to be suggestions are now decisions on my part. And, you know, it's not personal. It's I got to do what's best for the team. And I've got to make decisions based on, you know, what's going to win us ball games. And at the end of the day, we all got to live with that. And we all got to understand we're all in it for a common goal. And I wanted to say that in front of their parents. And I wanted their parents to hear that too, so that, you know, there was some, I guess, eyewitnesses, you know, some supporting right. voices behind it. And most of the parents, I shouldn't even say most, all of the parents were very, very supportive of that. And, you know, what's scary is now I'm reflecting on this, Mike, and it's like, it was almost too easy. You know what I mean? Like, it was just, where's the wrench in the works coming from?
I think it comes when there's an actual game and a kid doesn't play probably. As many minutes as he thinks he's going to. How about that? I'd say that's probably where the wrench comes in.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, come November 13th, it could change drastically. You're right.
What is in your day-to-day, what's different that you're doing a lot more of as the head coach that you maybe did very little of or didn't do at all as an assistant coach?
Can I say crap that I don't want to do?
Sure, absolutely. And then just expound on that a little bit. Give us an example of some of the crap that you have to do that you don't really want to do.
Gosh, I mean, it's true what they say. You just don't know what it's like until you're in that position. The first thing is I used to do scheduling. I when I was at McNeese, that was one of my jobs as the assistant, was to do scheduling, and I hated it then. And I always thought, you know, the head coach should be the one doing the scheduling. Like, you live and die by your schedule. And then I never did scheduling until this year. And I hate it. It's the worst necessary evil in college basketball. It's miserable to, you know, line up dates and times and.
What's the process like? So you're just calling up. Are you calling other coaches? Are you calling athletic directors? What's the process actually like for trying to get a team on your schedule?
So at D3, you basically deal directly with the head coaches. And some schools, the assistant coach does it, but mostly it's you're dealing with just other head coaches. And, you know, Jared had worked out some things for scheduling for next year, and I'm talking 22-23 season. You know, we've got to return some games. Some guys got to return games with us. But yeah, it's essentially, it's like, pick a school and you give them a call and you go, hey, you want to play? I mean, it's like creating a play date for your kids, right? I mean, it's,
yep.
It's the same idea. And it's grueling. Other coaches probably would disagree with me, but I think it's one of the worst things I have to do. Other things that are just like ridiculous. The dealing with, again, it's a necessary evil. I've got a great support system with our academic support staff. Guy by the name of Joe Cole, he's fantastic on tracking our kids, you know, academics. But when he comes around the corner in my office and says, "Hey, I got a kid," you know, I'm like,
"Right, you know what's coming."
Yeah, you know, and then I got to deal with that, and that takes me away from doing things that I want to get done, and you know, and ultimately that falls on me as an assistant coach. It was great. It was like, yeah, Jared, take care of it. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
So it's wild. Oh, the other thing too is obviously with the budget. You know, like I'm using the corporate credit card considerably more, or, you know, I'm ordering gear. Now I have to do check voucher requests and all this. I mean, the paperwork is just outrageous. And I say that laughingly, but I mean it. There's a lot of paperwork to get done. So
were those all things that you anticipated, or were any of them
a surprise? No. Yes, yeah. And no.
It's, you knew you had to do them, but maybe not how much time they were
gonna
take.
Yeah, that's probably more accurate.
All right. So where are you with your team right now in this moment? You said you feel like you're kind of on pace to get the things in that you need to get in order to prepare for your first game. How do you feel like the kids have taken to what you're trying to do philosophically, X's and O's, with them out on the floor?
Yeah.
Where are you in that respect?
I think, you know, again, because not a lot has changed, and we only have three recruited freshmen and the two walk-on freshmen, so, you know, a significant amount of guys back from last season. I was surprised at where we were. Yeah, even after day one, I thought we wouldn't be getting up and down the floor very much in these early practices, simply because one of the things I tell my guys is you're not responsible for anything you haven't been taught. And the curse of that is I have to teach everything, right?
Right.
And so the first day, I mean, we just did defensive breakdown stuff left and right. And again, I was pleasantly surprised at how quickly the guys were picking things up. I mean, I was chopping time off of drills and I was going, yeah, let's go, let's move on. And, you know, that changed what I originally had planned for practices after day one. We started getting up and down the floor a little bit. And I, you know, day two, I was like, all right, I got to teach some transition stuff, not only defensively, but what are we going to do offensively? So that we can get up and down. And the guys are picking this stuff up quick. I'm really, really proud of them. They've done a great job of not only paying attention and listening for those little changes and details that are mine, but they're also doing a great job with those five freshman guys, teaching those guys and keeping them up to speed as well. So that's been, I think, the biggest, I guess, proud moment for me is that our upperclassmen are really taking these younger guys under wing and becoming coaches themselves.
I'm assuming that went on in the off season as well, that if you have good leadership on the floor right now as you're returning to official practice, that in the off season that some of your returning upperclassmen were keeping your guys playing and keeping them engaged and making sure that they are ready come the first day of practice. So I'm assuming you've had conversations with those kids, even when you were an assistant coach, over the course of time. What are some of the things that you try to hope that they're going to do during their time away from the coaching staff to have themselves ready for the first day of practice?
Yeah. And they have been really good about that. One of the big things for me was I actually got a strength and conditioning coach within the first 5 days I was on the job. Got a hold of a guy that had worked with us in the past, and for whatever reason, for the last 6 years, he hasn't worked with us. He was so excited. He was like, "Why didn't you ask for me back?" And I was like, "I don't know. I wasn't the boss then, you know." And I'm not trying to throw Jared under the bus, but I was like, I don't know. And he's so excited to be working with our guys. He comes in, he's been coming in 3 times a week and working strength and conditioning with our guys. He's a guy, his name's Matt Brown, and he works out of Southlake, which I don't know if you're familiar with Southlake, Texas, but it's a football hotbed. And he works with a ton of NFL guys in the offseason and, you know, high school football prospects. And the guy was a competitive bodybuilder. And so when he worked with our guys before, man, he had like zero neck and like his biceps were as big as my thighs. And I mean, he's just this massive dude. And apparently he had some medical issues and his doctor was like, all right, you gotta change your training regimen or you're going to kill yourself. And so I reached back out to him and he was so hyped. He was like, he just wants to be a part of a team. I think, you know, like I told him to, you know, when we take our team picture, like he's going to be in the team picture. And he lit up like a Christmas tree. I mean, you should have seen his face, Mike. I mean, he's just smiling ear to ear. Like, that was the best thing you'd ever heard. When he came to his first team meeting, like, he's no bigger around than my pinky finger. And he's a triathlete now. I hardly recognize the guy.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, like, our guys found video of him squatting like 900 plus pounds, you know, of course the bar's like bending on his back. Right. And he's a complete legend on our team now because they see, you know, and they're bought in because they see how fit he is now. And he, you know, he knows how to do that safely. And so, so that's been big. That's been absolutely monstrous. Our guys came in way more in shape this year than the past five. And then the guys, they played open gym three times a week and they got in the gym and, you know, the D3 rules, you know, I can't be in there to observe. I can't require them to do things and check back with me. Now, if they volunteer that information, that's on them. And most of the time, they don't. And I just kind of hold on for dear life and you know what I mean?
I know exactly.
Yeah. So, but I feel like they've done a good job, prepping, especially the newcomers. They've prepped them very, very well for, you know, what's to be expected as a college basketball player once practice starts.
How did you put together the guys that are part of your staff? So you bring in strength and conditioning, you got a couple other guys that are part of your coaching staff. How do you bring those guys in? What's the working relationship been like with them so far?
First of all, the working relationship is fantastic. You know, we did talk about Matt Brown, our strength and conditioning coach. He's phenomenal and the guys love him. I mean, he works them hard and the guys love him to death. They'll run through a brick wall for him. We had a grad assistant last year in his first year, Kevin Owens, and Kevin stayed with me. So he will graduate in the spring, and I'll be looking for another grad assistant here for 2022-23 season. Kevin's been great. He's jumped in head first and been on board with me. He's a great story too, Mike. He actually played at Trinity down in San Antonio, who's in our conference. And he's great on recruiting trips because kids will come in and you know, our gym doesn't pass the eye test. It's old and we got bleachers on one side of the gym, but he'll tell them that mighty Trinity, you know, with all the whistles and bells and shiny things they have down there, they were 0-4 in our gym during his time at Trinity. So, that's been really great for, like I said, recruiting purposes. And then we hired in my former position as the athletics department recruiting coordinator, our previous grad assistant, Chris Connedy. And, Chris's background, he was an undergrad at TCU and he had worked in the athletic department helping to do football recruiting as an undergrad. And then he was also coaching basketball at a very high academic private school in Fort Worth, while he was an undergrad. And then he actually volunteered for a year before he got the GA spot with us. So he was on board with Jared for 3 years And then last year, he was an assistant high school coach at a private school here in Dallas-Fort Worth. And, you know, it just made sense to hire him in that spot because he had recruited at the University of Dallas before. You know, he did have that recruiting background with TCU, especially in the football area. And, you know, it was a guy that I knew and trusted. So he's been great, too. He's constantly poking his head in, throwing ideas. I mean, he's just, he gets it, you know. And he's very understanding about the fact that he might throw something at me and I'm going to like, I don't like it, you know, but he gets right. it and he's coming back with more. And that's what I love about him. And then also, I got contacted by an alum, who had played at University of Dallas before Jared. And he said, hey, you need to get a hold of Tim Carter, the former head coach at UTSA. And I said, really, what's that? And he's like, he's doing this thing with Nations of Coaches to provide character coaches to college basketball teams. And I said, all right. You know. So I connected with Tim. And Tim was at UTSA when I was at McNeese. And so, you know, we went to lunch one day and we talked about the old Southland Conference days. And you know, he liked to talk a little bit more about when we played him at home and they beat us by 25 than when he played in Lake Charles and we got him by 6. So, but he found us a character coach, and it was a guy that actually was a senior at UT Arlington the year I was at McNeese, and it was Tim's last year at UTSA. He was a point guard on that team, Jarrett Howell. And so Jarrett's jumped on, and he's been really, really great about, you know, providing our guys an outlet to talk about things away from basketball and or life lessons and those types of things. But he's also great because he was a fantastic point guard. And I told our guys, I said, look, when I was at McNeese and we were playing UT Arlington, it was my scout. And I had one thing on my scout. It was stop Jarrett Howell. Like, that was it. You know, like, that was all we had to do. The guy could play. And he played 7 years overseas professionally. And so he's got a little clout there. And so, you know, he jumps on board in practice. And, you know, I give him some freedom to coach our guys up because he knows what he's talking about. And so it's been fun. You know, it's been really neat to see you know, this staff come together, and it's been really phenomenal for me to have guys that I know and trust and I believe in.
What's been the coolest thing about becoming the head coach? What's something that you just, man, this is what being a head coach is all about? Does any one thing stand out to you that you really, really have enjoyed about being the head coach versus your previous role as an assistant?
There's one really funny one, and there's one, like, in all seriousness. Like,
all right, it's all right. Legit. Give us both.
So the legit one is I really enjoy the fact that I can now, you know, send a group down to one end with Coach Connedy. I can send a group down to one end with Coach Owens, and I can float. Like, that is awesome to me, you know, being able to see both sides. Because in previous years, I was one of those guys. I was down at one end, and that's all I was doing. I didn't get to see what was going on at the other end. So that, for me, is it was pretty cool. The first day we did a breakdown drill, and I was like, yeah, this is real, man. Like, I'm the guy now. You know what I mean?
Right. Absolutely.
The second more funny one is when I got the job, my local home newspaper reached out to me and said, hey, we want to do an article on you, you know, getting the job. And I was like, all right, great. You know, I'm all for it. And, you know, I shared with you when I was previously on the podcast that I was not a good player in high school. I mean, I was not a very good basketball player. So they write this article about me, and they put it in the local newspaper. Well, fast forward 2 weeks later, I'm recruiting a young man out of my local hometown area. Well, he commits the day after his visit. And of course, they want to do a article in the local newspaper, right? And so my name got mentioned in the Kitsap Sun sports page more times in the last 2 months than my whole entire life combined. Like, that was pretty cool too. So
that's very cool. It's funny. It's funny how things that you don't necessarily think are going to happen or be on the radar end up being things that you remember. And I'm sure you're going to probably have a lot of those moments as you go through the year. Is there anything else so far that stood out to you that you want to share that you think is relevant maybe to coaches who are taking over a program, either transitioning from an assistant in their own program into a head coaching position or coming as an assistant coach into their first head coaching position? Some piece of advice that you could share with coaches who are in that same position?
Yeah. Well, if you can transition from an assistant to a head coach in the same program you've been in and have the same boss and have a great relationship with the president of that school, I highly recommend it. I'm really fortunate that way. But I would just say that, you hear it all the time that relationships are everything, and it really has rung true as I transitioned, that one seat up the bench. I'm so glad that, I spent time getting to know our guys. I'm so glad that I met with those guys individually. And spent time away from basketball with those guys, because it just made things so much easier when day one of practice, I'm going, hey, this is going to be intense. It's going to be fast. It's going to be furious. Like, let's get after it. And they're like, yeah, I'm on board. It was just natural. It just felt right. So invest in your guys and invest in getting to know them, get to know their families. It really pays dividends in the long run.
All right. Last question.
Yeah.
Two-parter.
Okay.
When you look ahead over the next year or so, what's the biggest challenge that you have in front of you? And then what is the biggest joy? What puts a smile on your face when you get up in the morning and you think about what you're getting to do every day now as the head coach at the University of Dallas? So your biggest challenge and your biggest joy.
And doggone it, Mike, I should have known that question was coming, because that's the standard Hoopheads podcast wrap up here.
Absolutely.
I think for me, the biggest challenge would be, let's start with a really minor one right now, is being able to pace myself. I shared with you and I spoke yesterday, and I lost my voice halfway through my first practice as a collegiate head coach. And my Doc Rivers impression is on point right now. I'm sucking on a Luden's throat lozenge as we speak. And in fact, I talked to Coach Eastman today, and Coach was like, he's like, Matt, you got to pace yourself, man. Like, you're only 5 days in, brother. And I'm like, I know, I get it, but that's just me. And the thing that everybody's told me is, like, stay authentic to yourself. And that's who I am. I like being excited in the gym. And if I catch somebody doing something right, I want everybody in the gym to know it. I get excited anyway. But I think that, the biggest challenge for me is going to be, defining roles for our guys, and then, trying to manage minutes. It's been a while since I've had to do that. Obviously it's, 22 years since I was a head coach. How do I make my substitution patterns? How do I deal with a kid, like we mentioned earlier, that thinks he should be playing more minutes than what he should? I think that's probably the biggest challenge I've got ahead of me right now. The biggest joy for me is, man, I get to do it. I mean, I'm living my dream, right? I mean, this is what I've worked my butt off, you know, to do. And I do get excited when I wake up and I'm ready to tackle the day. And, you know, I sit and plan practice and it just, it's fun. I coach a game for a living, for crying out loud. Like, this is, can it get any better? You know, even when I'm doing scheduling, which I mentioned I hate, like, I still just enjoy the hell out of it. I mean, it's just everything about it's awesome.
Two good answers. I really think that what you've shared with us tonight, Matt, is going to be really valuable for coaches who are in the process of transitioning from an assistant coach to head coach in their first year, just like you are, or for coaches that are going to have that opportunity moving forward in the future. So we thank you for that. We obviously wish you good luck in your first season. And before we get out, I want to give you a chance to share how people can get in touch with you, social media, website. How can they find out more about what you guys are doing there at the University of Dallas? And then after you do that, I'll jump back in and wrap things up.
I appreciate it, Mike. All my social media is at Coach Matt Gron. And our team social media stuff is at U, the letter U, Dallas, MBB. All of our social media is all the same. Let me just say thank you to you guys as well. The series you guys did with Coach Killings was extremely valuable to me as I transitioned in. I was obviously listening before I got the head coaching job. And once I got the head coaching job, I went back and re-listened to them. So, you know, and thank you, Dwayne, for doing that. I don't know if Dwayne's listening to this one, but I really appreciated his insights in this. You know, can I drop a little more advice on guys?
Absolutely, for sure.
I would say, you know, think about, you know, your philosophy and have a firm grasp on things. I'm fortunate that what we've been doing here philosophically matches all very, very close to what I want to do and what basketball looks like. But I've reached out to some coaches that, you know, slid up that one seat and they weren't successful. And I think the biggest pitfall that they communicated to me was they didn't know and they weren't firm on what their basketball philosophy was. And so I would say that, you know, like I said, I'm very fortunate that what we did before I had a hand in big time. But, you know, I've heard that that's a pitfall.
That's really good advice. And definitely appreciate your kind words, Matt, about the series with Dwayne Killings from UAlbany.
Oh, it's off the charts, man.
We are hopeful that Dwayne and I have been working really hard back and forth to try to find a time that works for him and that also works for me. So I tend to be late at night and Dwayne understandably wants to be able to get some sleep and actually see his family in addition to trying to coach, be a Division I head coach for the first time. So we're hopeful that sometime here in the next week that we're going to get another episode recorded and kind of catch up on where he's been as practice has started and heading towards their first game as well. So hopefully that episode will be coming out relatively soon once Dwayne and I can connect on figuring out a time that works. And we're going to continue that series hopefully through the remainder of his entire first year. So please keep a lookout for that, people who are out there in the audience. And hopefully there are other coaches out there besides you, Matt, that are finding value in that. And I think you provided a tremendous amount of value and insight with some of the things that you shared tonight as well. So once more, thank you for taking the time. We really do appreciate it. And we appreciate you being part of the Hoopheads Pod family. We appreciate you being a two-time guest, which puts you, as we circle back to the beginning of the podcast, as a very exclusive club. I don't know how valuable it is.
I might have just brought the room down, though. I don't know, man.
I don't know how impressive it is to be part of that exclusive club, but we'll take it. It's exclusive, at least in our world. So again, thank you, Matt. Really appreciate it. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.